Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse right here on 670 The Score and your free Odyssey app, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. I am David Haw, along with Bruce Levine, until 11 o'clock, talking baseball again on the final weekend of a regular season that cannot end soon enough for the White Sox. But the Cubs might consider the start of something good. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning, David. Yeah, you're right. It's an ever-changing 162-game season. And, you know, let's say, first of all, David, 162 games uninterrupted. Something different. 2020, 2021. 21 was uninterrupted, but it didn't start until the middle of June with full fans in the stands. So this was something to really be thankful for, and remarkably back to normal for people that love the game, love sports, and just a happy, healthy year. So we're very, very grateful for that. But, you know, getting back to the main topicality here, and that is that it is a good ending for the Chicago Cubs this year, having won 10 out of 11. White Sox, you know, gone through this awful stretch at the end here after everybody felt the team was back online under Miguel Cairo and everything was going to be pointed toward the playoffs, and then hitting that 8-game skid can't end soon enough for the Chicago White Sox, even though they've won 2 in a row.
Yeah, just to bring people up to date, in case you went to bed early or maybe just actively ignored the White Sox, they beat Yu Darvish and the Padres, who were a postseason team. They were out in San Diego, 3-1 winners out on the West Coast. The Cubs, meanwhile, as you've alluded to, Bruce, 6-1 winners over the Reds at Wrigley Field on Friday afternoon. They're back at it today. Same two teams, same ballpark, same time, 12:45 right here on the Score, the pregame show. Cubs now 5 straight. Getting great starting pitching, getting some real timely hitting, but it's all about the pitching on the north side with the White Sox. Where do you want to start? We're going to get into a lot of this today as we examine the manager's role, as we examine what they do with the roster that has too many duplicate parts. We've got a lot to look at in terms of the front office. 312-644-6767, Bruce. There are a lot of ways that we could attack what went wrong with the White Sox. And frankly, what is going right with the Cubs? I think one common theme, and I think it bears asking as we look around baseball as well, with two teams in the playoffs that made managerial changes during the season. The Toronto Blue Jays are in, the Philadelphia Phillies close. What is the role of a manager, and how much impact can one guy have on his baseball team?
It's a great question, David. And again, 312-644-6767. This is the Chicago Fan Show. David and I are just running it for you for the time being. 2 hours every Saturday, 52 weeks out of the year. But, David, it's a wonderful question, because we've had many people over the past 10 years. And a lot of people, you know, the great minds and great shows that we do on this station are under the opinion that managers don't matter that much when it comes to outcomes. And I guess if you want to take that look at, you know, the La Russa situation, you might say they were a division winner and won 93 games in 2021. And under La Russa this year, they were 62-65. Under Cairo, they're 16-14, so pretty much the same team. What difference did the manager make in a year where they had injuries, where they had failures of star players to play up to their capability, a lack of home runs where it appears for the first time in who knows how long in a full season The White Sox won't even have a 20 home run hitter on their team. Where is the finger pointed, and what is the reason? What is the manager's role going forward, I guess, is what we talk about, and how important is it?
It's a good question. I think everybody's got their opinions. And Bruce, I think the consensus is that Tony La Russa was more liability than asset on the South side. And I know you may not agree with that, but that's what makes this a really interesting debate. I do want to ask you, before we get too much into this discussion and before we get to the phone calls from the listeners and the audience that will weigh in, what can you tell us about the latest in regard to Tony La Russa? He is obviously not managing again. That was announced. But I just wanted to know, and before we get to the informed speculation about what lies ahead, what do you think will happen, and what do you know based on your relationships with people in the game that you have tapped into in the past week?
So no decision's been made by the Chicago White Sox as to Tony La Russa's role for next year. He has a contract at this point. They are monitoring his health and viability of being able to come back next year. Those discussions, I'm sure, will have been taking place and will take place as the season ends here and they go into the offseason. But we can tell you no decision's been made. There were reports, and you know, a number of them on Twitter, saying that he's out as manager and that he's out of the organization. Those aren't true. That those decisions have not been made at this point in time. So from that perspective, do we expect Tony La Russa to be back next year? I don't think a lot of people do. I personally don't think he's going to be back as a manager, but that's just my speculation. It's not based on talking to anybody in the White Sox organization or Tony himself. I think there's a strong possibility that Tony La Russa will remain a part of the White Sox organization if he is healthy enough, if he is wanting to, and if the White Sox find a role that fits Tony La Russa other than manager. But again, it's pure speculation on that. I can tell you flat out for real that he has not been told he's being let go, and he is the decision on next year will be one made between him and the White Sox, and it hasn't been made yet.
Your experience in this is why I think I look forward to the show every Saturday morning. I want to get your opinions on a lot of things, but specifically about what we're talking about in terms of managers. And I want to zoom out for a moment, because you look around baseball, and I mentioned the Blue Jays and the Phillies. They make managerial moves in season. Kind of controversial in Philadelphia. They got rid of Joe Girardi in May. I think it was June 3rd, excuse me. And they were 22-29. And Rob Thompson has gotten that team on the verge of a postseason berth. They have a half-game lead over the Brewers. We saw the Cubs sweep the Phillies this week. Good baseball team. Cubs took care of business, though. You look at Rob Thompson's impact. You look at Toronto. They are 42-27 since making the change to John Schneider in Toronto. And Bruce, overnight, the Seattle Mariners broke the longest playoffs drought in professional sports, 21 years. The Mariners are back in the playoffs. Scott Servais, former Cub catcher, back on that 98 team. He's been there a while. This is going to be his first postseason, and so he probably went from being thought he was discounted and irrelevant to now, boy, celebrated and looking forward to their postseason. So you have a lot of different examples. Is it as easy to put one philosophy that applies to, because it's just, I guess my point is, it's so different depending on the organization, depending on the context of the season, and depending on your roster?
Well, I think you said it at the end, the roster. So what type of quality do you have? How will injuries impact you, and who will have bad years? It appears the White Sox had everything going the beginning of the year. They had many injuries, and the guys that were on the field, for the most part, didn't live up to the back of their baseball card. I mean, how many guys on the White Sox actually played to the level that was expected of them when they were on the field this year? Okay, go around. Let's quickly go around. Catcher, absolutely not.
No.
Third base, no, David, right? Shortstop, Anderson was hitting 300, but impactfully, not the same player.
79 games.
Right. Right. Second base, you know, they'll be looking for another second baseman. Abreu, a lot of pluses. Probably the best player on the team. Didn't live up to the slug that they wanted from him. Okay. Left field, Eloy hurt. When he's out there, hits pretty well. Robert hurt 80 games. Okay. Right field, I think we can say Vaughn had a good year and it shows some promise. And that, you know, Sheets has been showing some good power from the left side, more contact. But my point, I guess, is just proven as we go around. So we started with the premise, a great roster. Looked like it, right? Then injury had a big impact. And then having poor seasons. The majority of the White Sox players had poor seasons this year. Tony La Russa are not in the equation. Miguel Cairo are not in the equation. It just happens to be a combining of injuries and a bad year, and then the illness of La Russa kind of exacerbated the whole thing. So you tell me, David, your perspective on it.
All right, I will tell you that everything you said about the injuries is indisputable because the White Sox have had, you know, as bad of a streak in that regard as any team in baseball. You look at the Twins, though, they've been hit by injuries as well. I think the point of comparison, and this may be just a very provincial, convenient one to make, but even with those injuries, Bruce, I wonder talent-wise if the White Sox are a more talented team than the Cubs. And I think the answer is yes. When I look at the Cubs and I look at the limitations that they have on their roster, and I see them doing things regardless of the lack of pressure, and people will say, you know, they aren't in the midst of a pennant race and the expectations were so low, it's easier to operate and to function in that environment. But I also see David Ross managing a team that's aggressive, that's trying to force mistakes from your opponent, that's playing smart and sound defense, that running the bases intelligently for the most part, getting quality pitching, absolutely, from unexpected sources. But I see a team being managed and being maximized in terms of potential on the north side, and I look at the White Sox with the need for the manager to be more impactful by being a team that has a reduced margin for error, so they're going to be smarter on the bases, by being a team that's more defensively sound and more focused and intense in those situations, and being the smartest team on the field when the White Sox are the clear opposite. So I think my own comparison, I do hold the manager a little more responsible with the White Sox for their failure to meet expectations, because I look at the Cubs and I see what they're doing with David Ross, and I'm thinking, wow, that's how a manager can impact a baseball team.
You can't leave out the front office either, and the vulnerability of the roster after the stars got hurt. I don't think you and I, if we were general manager and executive vice president, could have done better than Kenny Williams or Rick Hahn in this situation, but I think that it will cause them and Jerry Reinsdorf to look at the depth of the lineup and the depth of the 26-man roster and look at that with a little bit more import, because of the fact that injuries are such a big factor involved in baseball these days. But you look at La Russa and his vulnerability as manager and his record, you can see most of the year them starting four or five guys that were bench players, okay? You're not going to win a pennant when you're starting most of your bench all year long, okay? That is just a reality. It's a reality of the situation. It's a reality of Anderson, Jimenez, and Robert all playing 50% of the games in 2022.
Don't answer now. I want to get your answer before the show is over, though, Bruce, because when you're talking about this and we're talking about the youth and that's being served with the Cubs, and we saw the prospects gathered at Wrigley Field for a prospect camp, and Pete Crow Armstrong is there with Matt Mervis and all kinds of guys walking around with futures that are bright. Which team in town is closer to winning a World Series? Is it the White Sox or is it the Cubs? And I think that it's a really more interesting discussion than it probably should be on the first day of October. Certainly a more interesting discussion than we expected it to be at this stage of the baseball season. But let's right now, as we ponder the answer to that question, let's go to the Score listener line powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. 312-644-6767. Let us know what you think about our discussion over managers or about the White Sox and the Cubs. Mike is in Glencoe. Mike, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Good morning, fellas, and I appreciate very much being on the phone today with you. Your producer is very nice. I wanted to say something. I'm a very cranky Sox fan, and I agree that this is that they're not a successful franchise, and that's Mr. Reinsdorf's fault. But I also believe that he needs to be recognized for what he has done with the Sox, and that is it's been a stable franchise. If you were a fan of my era, and I'm 67, you grew up with yearly threats that the Sox were going to move. You grew up with the Bill Veeck team who had no business being a baseball owner because he didn't have the money. You can say what you want about Reinsdorf, and yes, he did almost move the team when he first bought it. But in the ensuing, 35, 38 years, it's been a stable business, a stable franchise. We haven't had to worry about him moving the team. But for those people who are anxious for Reinsdorf to sell the team, you got to be careful what you ask for, because the question will arise again. If some shark buys the team, they're going to look at this operation and say, we can make more money somewhere else, and they'll take it there. So I think we need to be real careful when we criticize Reinsdorf, because at the very least, he's kept the team in Chicago.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate the phone call. Bruce, I think that's a very low bar, and I would counter Mike respectfully by saying the White Sox have not won a playoff series since 2005. They have two playoff victories in games. Since that point, he hijacked the managerial process 2 years ago, which set the franchise back. So I feel very comfortable criticizing Jerry Reinsdorf.
Yeah, well, you know, I think you take the hijacking too far, because then you leave out 2021 and realize that they won a division, right? So are you separating 2021 from 2022, or are you just you're not including that?
They won the division. They got nowhere in the playoffs. It was a World Series or bust mentality. He was hired to replace Ricky Renteria to take the next step that never was taken.
Right, but it was their first division that they had won since 2008, right?
So I don't think he was the right man for the right time for this White Sox open window.
That's fair. Look,
championships.
I don't argue your opinion. I'm just, you know, perspective wise. What I'm saying about, if we want to talk about Jerry Reinsdorf's ownership, is I think he'd be the first one to tell you that they should have been more successful and gone to the playoffs years in a row throughout the 40 years that he and his partners have owned the Chicago White Sox. I don't think you'd get any argument from him whatsoever about that.
Yeah, and I think that applauding your ownership group or your owner specifically for not moving your team, again, if you are that fan, that's okay. Those are your standards, and you are entitled to have whatever expectations you take into every season, but I think it's a pretty low bar to clear. Let's go back to the phone lines. Rodney is on the south side. Rodney, welcome inside the clubhouse. Good morning, Rodney.
Okay, the response to that last caller, Jerry Reinsdorf has won for 42 years. That's no excuse. Won for 42 years in Chicago. But pertaining to this team today, the general manager and the president put this team together. Okay? I mean, you can use the injuries. You can use guys for having bad years. But the general manager and the president didn't do anything in the offseason. Nothing. They didn't do anything at the trade deadline. Okay? To me, I don't understand how a guy like Dayton Moore can be fired at Kansas City, but Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn is not called to the carpet as we speak. Please explain that to me.
Thanks for the phone call. Bruce, what do you think?
A fair call, Rodney. I would say that standards for Jerry Reinsdorf as far as his people go and what he looks for in his front office and the people around him is different from the other owners, and that hard work, loyalty, and stick-to-itiveness is what Jerry Reinsdorf looks at. As far as the end result to winning, obviously that is been the goal all along, but it hasn't been the number one thing as to how people retain their jobs or don't retain their jobs in the organization.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Bruce. I do think that looking at the front office with the White Sox and concluding that there is no need for change and embracing the status quo, that's not the way I would look at it. I just have to be honest here. After Rick Hahn's tenure, he took over in 2012, 27 of the 29 teams have made changes at the general manager position. The two that haven't are Brian Cashman and Mike Rizzo. They both have World Series rings. I wonder how they're going to sell this if they don't make any changes, and I look forward to that.
In
because
fairness
that's what I
to
expect.
Rick and Kenny, they were in conversations last year for being executives of the year, okay, with the White Sox winning the division, okay? Those awards are based on the regular season, okay, not on whether you made it deep to the playoffs or not. So you have to be fair about it, and you have to say that the rebuild that they put together was impressive with the talent that they came up with, and the trades that they made were impressive. Some of the free agents have not worked out. That has been something that the White Sox organization has to wear for a long time. And some of them, like, is there a better free signing this year than Johnny Cueto? He kept the White Sox afloat for most of the year. Obviously, it's not going to amount to much as far as White Sox fans' mentality, but there are very good things that the White Sox run off.
We got a break, but I could counter that by saying Johnny Cueto was made necessary because Carlos Rodon was let go, and look what he did in San Francisco. He just got done finishing a season that I think every White Sox fan would have liked to see him have on the South Side.
Well, let go and signing for $42 million are two different things, right?
Well, I guess that's a good point, Bruce. We need to continue this debate after the break, and we continue to argue. But you know what? Next, when we come back, one of our favorite segments, Chin Music, right here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
High and inside.
For some chin music.
Hey, Alan, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
Would you consider Ozzie Guillen a viable candidate?
No.
Because?
Because no. Now, here's the thing. I love Ozzie. I think he's number one. I think Ozzie is a terrific baseball guy. I think Ozzie is a very funny guy. I think he understands how to put together or manage a winning team as he did in 2005. I don't doubt Ozzie's talent for one second because I think he's one of the most aware and one of the most astute baseball guys around. And he's been that way for quite some time. It allowed him to achieve what he did as a player, later achieve what he did as a coach, and, of course, achieve what he did as a White Sox manager. I, having said all of those things, and again, I really enjoy Ozzie, I don't think that he's coming back to this team.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. David Haw, Bruce Levine, to 11 o'clock, playing chin music. And that was Steve Stone on the Mullin Haw Show on Thursday, I believe it was, and Bruce, very definitive about Ozzie Guillen's potential candidacy for a managerial opening if one exists on the South Side with the White Sox. Maybe people weren't surprised that direction and Ozzie not being a viable candidate. I guess I was a little bit surprised at how emphatic Steve Stone was in answering the question.
Well, he's emphatic because he's knowledgeable. And why is he knowledgeable? He's been in the organization for 15 years, okay? He has the trust and he has the information from people that are in the know, okay? Is it 100% all the time? No, it's not, okay? But Steve is as sharp and as hooked in as most people in the game, as any person in the game. So from his perspective, he knows what I know and that we'll just share in the show. That when Ozzie burned his bridge with the White Sox in 2011 and moved on to Miami, That was the end of total trust in Ozzy. Okay. Do they love Ozzy? Yes. Does Jerry Reinsdorf love Ozzy as a friend and a guy that brought a championship to the Chicago White Sox? 100%. Does Kenny Williams admire and love Ozzy for what he did and who he is? Absolutely. One of the great players in the game, one of the great managers in the game. But that doesn't change the fact that they just don't trust him enough to make him manager again. And that is my opinion.
Okay.
It's based on what I've seen, what I've talked to. I don't agree with it. I think that, you know, look at the relationship between Billy Martin and the Yankees. How many times he was brought back by Steinbrenner. How many times they won championships with Martin. I think, you know, that's it. But from my perspective, Ozzy's not going to manage this team. And I think he would have done a terrific job. And he should be managing somewhere because he's a brilliant baseball guy that can get the most out of all the players, including no matter what country they're from or who they represent. Ozzy is a great baseball guy, but I don't think it's not going to happen here with Jerry Reinsdorf and his partners, his owners of the team. I just don't think
and
it will.
And what you're alluding to at the end of the 11th season is that he left before the season was over. Is that what you're referring to in the burning a bridge and destroying the trust?
He left, but you know there was already pretty much a deal in place with the Marlins to manage that team.
Okay.
That's where it was. Okay.
So,
Ozzy, I don't think did anything horribly wrong except look for his future and look for a chance to go and manage again because the relationship between him and Kenny at that time had deteriorated to the point where it was not functioning and the team wasn't playing up to the standards that they thought it should be, whether it was Kenny's fault, Ozzy's fault, or a combination of the two. The reality was is that that ship had sailed and it was time for Ozzy to go somewhere else.
I think people change over the course of a decade. People evolve, and I just think it's inconsistent logic to want to cling to the status quo when it comes to the decision makers in the front office and yet reject this premise that going back to the past for somebody who is eager to manage and probably has changed as a man and as a professional wouldn't be a smart move to make for a team that needs it. And I think, you know, you have to look at what this team needs most. And I think it needs attention to the details. It needs a motivational manager at some point because you need somebody that's going to get the most out of the roster. That said, I think we both agree what the reason Steve Stone was emphatic, as you point out, as you know, is that this front office, this ownership group, Jerry Reinsdorf is not going to go in that direction, even though I would contend and make the argument that it is the right direction for this team to go at this time. Now,
well,
go ahead. You can answer that because I want to get to a list of guys
who make sense. I will say that they did sign off on the fact that Ozzy could be on a pre- and post-game and tell the truth like no one else tells the truth. I mean, it's must-watch post-game with Ozzy and Chuck. Because Ozzy, it tells you exactly what he thinks on a daily basis. And he will say the team sucks that day. And he will take a fan's perspective on why they made two errors and why they're not focused. And it's just tremendous entertainment. And he's the most honest guy you'd ever meet in your life.
He can't get in Yoan Moncada's face from the studio. You can't tell him.
He's gotten in his face.
But not in the fourth inning in real time. Yeah. You can't make a substitution because the guy's lagging and being lazy from the studio. I mean, being a manager is much different.
I guess the question is if you hit 212 like Moncada has and you look to the bench and you see that all the alternatives are injured, I guess it's Moncada that's going to go out there no matter whether it's Ozzy, John McGraw, or Tony La Russa or Cairo managing the team. You know, it's a matter of depth on your bench and who's up next. I don't think it's a matter of him making $20 million a year.
Quickly before we break, I want to give you my short list. I want you to see if you would add anybody. Bruce Bochy, Joe Girardi, Miguel Cairo, because you owe him an interview at least, A.J. Pierzynski, Chris Getz, Willie Harris. Those would be six men that I would interview for the job. And I would interview Ozzy, but it's not going to happen. So I think that I have to be realistic here.
I'd interview Tony La Russa.
I would end that chapter. I would close it. I would thank him for the memories. And I would move on.
But honestly, that's going to be the first interview. Are you healthy? Can you continue? And then the second part is management saying, do we want you to continue as manager? And if you don't continue as manager, do we want you as a part of our front office going forward? Those are the first questions that will be answered after the season ends by Kenny Williams, Rick Hahn, and Jerry Reinsdorf, and Tony La Russa.
Before we move on to the Cubs in the next segment, Bruce, do you expect that kind of clarity to come as early as this week as the season ends?
We left one name out, Joe Maddon.
I probably wouldn't go that direction, and I don't expect the White Sox to.
Is he too old for you?
No. I think that it probably isn't the kind of fit they're looking for. I will still read the book of Joe, and I will definitely look forward to seeing what he has to say with Tom Verducci. But I would not hire him as a White Sox manager.
So going from a 78-year-old manager to a 68-year-old manager doesn't impact you on that decision?
I'm trying to be realistic and put my list together, Bruce, and I don't think Joe Maddon is a fit for Jerry Reinsdorf. That's more than anything.
I don't know. I think they have a pretty strong and friendly relationship from the past. Not in-depth, but always a good one. And I don't know. I mean, because he was fired twice now, does that erode what Joe brings to the table?
I don't think so, but I just don't know how realistic it is. I'm going to have to think about this one now, Bruce. My list is no longer a short list. It's a kind of short list.
Is Cairo really 16 and 14? Is he on that list for you?
That's a courtesy interview. I'm sorry. You respect what he tried to do. He was in an impossible situation, started strong, finished with a fizzle. I don't think that you can realistically hire Miguel Cairo to replace
Tony La Russa. How about 2 weeks ago?
Well, that was 2 weeks ago. Things change, Bruce. Keep up. Keep up. All right, let's keep up and talk about the Cubs when we come back. Wilson Contreras had some very interesting things to say about the future as well this week. We will hear them next on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
For me, it's more like feeling that I'm wanted. That I'm going to be somewhere that I'm wanted. And I feel like they gonna appreciate what I do on the field and off the field. A place they appreciate what I bring to the clubhouse and what I can do.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. David Haw, Bruce Levine here, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score until 11 o'clock talking baseball. That was Wilson Contreras, who is entering possibly his final homestand and his final home game as a Chicago Cub tomorrow. We've been down this path before, Bruce, with the long goodbyes and the maybe farewells. Wilson Contreras will be a free agent. The Cubs can make him a qualifying offer, and he said he would consider signing it. What lies ahead for Wilson Contreras, and how likely, Bruce, is it that the Cubs make that qualifying offer that if Wilson Contreras signs, guarantees him $19 million next year?
Before the show, David, you and I, you know, we have to inform our great listeners and people that pay attention to Chicago baseball. And we talked about the fact that myself, I haven't done a very good job of covering Wilson Contreras' free agency because I never directly have asked him why the Chicago Cubs don't want to sign him. And what he thinks the reason is. Because you heard in that soundbite, and it's worth playing again if you want to, David, him saying, I need someone to show that they care about me and they believe in me. It's obvious they don't hear, okay? For whatever reason, I think they certainly respect what he's done here. I think they respect the way that he's gone about working to become a better catcher, that he's been an all-star three times, an all-star starter three times for the Chicago Cubs. But the disconnect is we've never really found out the reason why they don't want him to continue with the Chicago Cubs. We never heard that he's turned down contract offers like we did from Rizzo, Bryant, and Baez. It was always out there that there were offers made to those guys, and
right,
that they didn't think it was good enough. We've never heard that with Wilson Contreras. So I guess the bad work that I've done is, has there ever been a long-term contract offered? And does Contreras now just know that for this whole last year that he's moving on? Because he's been so respectful through this process. He's been so good at talking to every reporter that's come up to his cubicle and talking at length about his free agency and about wanting to move on and how much he loves the organization. I don't think he's had a misstep along the way. And by the way,
well, let me hazard a guess.
All-star starter again in 2022 for the National League.
You can't just let an all-star catcher get out of town. And I think that's why they'll extend the offer, so they are guaranteed some sort of compensation. But let's get to the bigger question that you pose. I just think that the Cubs have concluded that Wilson Contreras is not the right catcher for this emphasis on pitching. And when you look at Adrian Sampson having as good of a month of September as any pitcher in the National League, going five starts with six-plus innings or more with giving up one run or fewer, something that hasn't been done since Yu Darvish was in town. When you look at Javier Assad, when you look at Hayden Wesneski, and you've got Justin Steele and Keegan Thompson, you've got the core and the foundation of a young pitching infrastructure you want to build on. I don't think they believe Wilson Contreras is equipped as a catcher, as a receiver, to pay what he thinks he is worth. I think that's a tactical mistake. I think that's going to be a huge error they regret. But I don't think they're motivated to put him behind the plate as these pitchers develop, because I don't think they trust him to be part of that development.
Don't forget that there was a very excellent defensive catcher that the Cubs had, and now he's the manager of the team. He has to be part of the equation as well when they ask him about, is Wilson Contreras somebody that you think can be our guy that navigates these young pitchers moving forward? So, and I don't know that factually, but I do know for sure that David Ross is an impactful manager as far as his opinions go.
Bingo.
As far as player personnel.
Bingo, Bruce. You just answered your own question, and it also ties into this whole idea, how impactful is a manager? You gotta believe that if David Ross would want Wilson Contreras to stay, Wilson Contreras would stay. David Ross has that kind of sway in the organization. He has that kind of gravitas. His words carry weight. If David Ross said, Wilson Contreras has got to stay, Jed, I want him here, he's the right guy for this staff, I got to think the discussion would be over. But it's not happened. So I don't think that David Ross is sold on Wilson Contreras.
Yeah, I don't think he's the sole reason why that would happen. But I think it's an organization opinion. Whether it's – I think it's more, David, pitches called, okay? Because – contrary to opinion, catchers do call games for pitchers. When they're looking at in the dugout and you see they're waiting for a sign, that's 95% of the time, almost 100% of the time, just people looking at these situations going down the line. David, take it away, my friend.
Well, I think that when you talk about the Wilson Contreras conundrum, it is one thing that will help determine what the offseason will hold. If you are serious about contending in 2023, if you are serious about challenging for a divisional title or a playoff berth, then you've got to consider creating another hole at a position that's very important. So I don't know if that will mean Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins and David Ross, you know, discuss a different plan of action, but I do think that Wilson Contreras, all-star catcher Wilson Contreras, is somebody they should really give a long, hard look to before they determine that he's worth letting walk away. Now, the options exist, Bruce, as we know. $19 million is what it would cost him if he signs a qualifying offer. But you're the Cubs, and you have to make that offer or risk losing him for nothing. And I think that's a better risk-reward. You take the risk that he's going to sign it because the free agent market also will be out there. He'll give him some options, but I don't know how robust it will be. There weren't a lot of opportunities there and a lot of teams interested at the trade deadline when we were thinking that Wilson Contreras was on his way out of town, and that was the last time we were saying, well, this is the last this for that, this for Wilson Contreras. This is his last appearance at Wrigley Field. Stay tuned. There's a lot more drama. There's a lot more to unfold in the Wilson Contreras saga, but he wants to go where he is wanted. It's just unclear right now how badly the Cubs want to keep him. All right, when we come back, we have a big 10 o'clock hour ahead for you. Jason Hayward is not going to be a Chicago Cub for much longer. This is indeed his last week on the team. He has not been active since June, but he's getting a send-off, and we will talk to him at 10:30. When we come back, we asked the question earlier in the show, which team is closer to winning a championship? Is it the Chicago Cubs, who were 36-29 since the All-Star break, one of the biggest surprises in the National League, or is it the Chicago White Sox, with all that talent, the most disappointing team in baseball? Are they coming back and getting ready to make another run on it? How open is their championship window after this disappointing season? Let us know what you think. If you were on hold or you hung up, call back. We're going to get to your calls when we return. 312-644-6767 with Bruce Levine. I'm David Haw, talking baseball inside the clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.